What's up, champs? Welcome to another episode of the Short Shifts Fantasy Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Keeping Carlson. And it is my sincere hope that today I am referring to some actual league champs here. If your league has wrapped up and if you're still fighting, that's why we're here. Give you a little bit more information. I'm your host, Louis Ezekiel. Joining me tonight, my pal and yours from throughout our fantasy hockey season, Elizabeth, wrapping up her first season as a Short Shifts host. Elizabeth, how are you doing on this fine, fine Wednesday evening?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a long season. I've been so excited to be a part of the team. And I do want to say, like, for anybody out there listening and wondering, I just happened to be in the right place at the right time chatting with you. And it's been a blast. I decided to try this out and I've had so much fun. So try new things, everybody. That's your summer goal.
Absolutely. You know, I was, you know, a teacher with no podcasting experience when Ben and I got snapped up based on a Twitter account that we were running that was half unserious nonsense that was mostly me and half good hockey analysis that was mostly him. And you know, you just never know how things will turn out. So yeah, take advantage of opportunities. I always thought that maybe sports commentary could be a second path for me. And I love what I do as a teacher, certainly, but, you know, it's fun to get a chance to dabble in the other side of things and to do it in a way where I feel like, you know, I can say what I think. You know, they were having this big discussion in the Discord today about, especially some of the Leafs podcast people who are, you know, ingrained in hockey media. And I have to imagine their whole task is so much different. Like, I pretty much just get to write down and say what I think. And I don't think that everybody in hockey media has that same privilege. So it is a pretty cool experience.
It is. And you're right. We do get to come out here. We get to share our opinions. And luckily, everybody likes hearing them. At least I like to think they do. I look at the positive reviews only. But it is nice. And I mean, on our patron Discord, there's a lot of lovely people in there who give us lots of good ideas, ask us lots of questions, and we get to come on here and just talk about them, which is lovely.
Yeah, it's an outstanding space. I absolutely agree. All right, well, let's jump into things here tonight. We've got a number of things to talk about. You know, we threw our list together kind of loosey-goosey, so it'll be a fun show, a little more, you know, loose tie, a little more relaxed, I think, but hopefully some useful information here. Obviously, we're thinking a little bit about, you know, this current week that we're in, but we've also got some longer term thoughts about, you know, some patterns that we saw, some players who stood out to us who had some interesting stat lines and might be worth taking a look at in a different way moving forward. We've got some of our worst and best moves from throughout the season that impacted the way our seasons wrapped up. And yeah, we'll just kind of get to all of it here. One really interesting story for our first headline here, and I'll toss this to you, but we saw a tremendous comeback from the Canucks. Kind of reminded me of the comeback I endured from my fantasy hockey playoffs opponent in the finals. I was riding a 5-game win streak and thought I had the 6th one in the bag and I was going to avoid relegation. And then lo and behold, my opponent staged a historic comeback of their own. But tell us a little bit about what the Canucks managed to do in the final minute of their game.
Yes, Canucks made history Monday night, and they are probably also a little bit sad about this because they're having a rough end to their season as well here. But they did pull out the win on Monday night. They were trailing Dallas by 3 goals going into that final minute, trailing by 3 goals, and scored 3 goals to take the game into overtime. They won in overtime. Huge accomplishment, really. Like, Dallas really took their foot off the gas here. They let Ratty get a goal. Suter got 2 goals in 30 seconds. Amazing. I kind of wish this was happening while I was still playing because he's still on my team. And then Sherwood gets the OT goal. These are all guys who it would be so exciting if this had happened while we were still in our finals. But hopefully there's someone out there listening to us who is still in their finals and got these amazing points.
Yeah, Suter, you know, had a great start to the week, but a tough one. Talking about last week, kind of a tough finish. I needed him to outscore Garland and I don't know, some Vegas defenseman by a point and a half and just couldn't quite hack it. He picked up an assist, but it wasn't enough to stay ahead. So we'll talk about this later, but when you get relegated by a point and a half, everything gets really magnified, and definitely seeing some of the developments from this week, including those two Pew Suter goals, was a little tough to handle. Like, on the one hand, it was such an exciting finish. And on the other hand, getting hung up on what could have been has been a real challenge for me over the course of these, last few nights. But, I'm working through it. I'll talk to my therapist about it and we'll get through. Really excited.
That's really why we're here, everyone. Lewis is talking through his feelings tonight.
That's why we started Short Shifts. All the hockey information is secondary. The rest of it is me working through things. Hey, another guy who, set a nice record. Obviously, I know Ovi got all of the attention on Sunday. Not a record necessarily, but kind of like a personal milestone, was Pasta reaching 100 points, even on this very down year for the Bruins. It seems like nearly everything has gone through that Boston top line, as you sort of would expect looking up and down the roster. But, you know, he was a guy who could have been had early in the season for pretty cheap. I know that we expressed some concern bordering on terror for him at times. It's just a reminder that, you know, oftentimes water is going to find its level. And those really talented players are going to find ways to break through even when they are in some nasty slumps. It is another data point that kind of, you know, is in the direction of, you know, especially early season, it can be very easy to get wrapped up in those slumps. But if you can weather the storm, or if you can take some bold action, like maybe picking up Pasta when he's looking like a dud, then, you know, you can obviously have very nice outcomes. So these are the sorts of things that I want to sort of keep an eye out for as we talk about some of these players and discuss some of their accomplishments, by the end of the season here, is we might want to reorient the way that we think about some of these guys. And, I think this is more of a strategy thing, is if you've got a really talented player who looks a little bit down early on, you know, being bold and making a move for someone, you know, trading one of your, you know, fourth round picks who's maybe overachieving could really give you that solid option to have them regress back towards their mean and be really successful. So even in a very tough year for the Bruins, David Pastrnak scoring 100 points is outstanding. And I think that, you know, should be an eye opener, a bit of a reminder for us, especially when, you know, we have those very small sample sizes and we're starting to really sweat some of our higher picks not doing so well.
Absolutely. This is a huge accomplishment for any player. I would say you get 100 points and your team's not doing so good, you definitely want to celebrate those small wins. He's actually had 16 points in his last seven games, which is also really exciting. A lot of that coming on the back end here. You do want to watch for those players who do start slow and peak at the end. It is something that can help you win in those later weeks. I know we were talking before the show, I had a good start to the season and then my team slowed down. So sometimes you want a few of these guys who are going to peak later in the season.
Yeah, Kevin Fiala is like the standard bearer of the second half superstar. He showed a bit of it here. But yeah, I think Pasta gets maybe the gold medal in that regard for this season. At least in terms of vibes, I'm not looking at the data here right now, but just something that I've been sort of thinking about a little bit. Speaking of another player who's had a bit of a late season glow up, tell us about Tristan Jarry's latest accomplishment.
Tristan Jarry, the guy I drafted and had to drop within a month, is doing great now. He just got his second shutout of the season on Tuesday. He made 26 saves and the team scored 5 goals. I didn't think we were going to be saying that about this team again this year, but very exciting for them. On the year, he's still down a little bit, 3.13 goals against average, a .892. You'd like him to be a little bit higher, but you know what? A game like we saw on Tuesday is what I expected out of him when I drafted him. And I think that if you're still playing and he fits into your schedule and you can get a game or two, he is on a bit of a heater and I would take the risk again. I really would.
I think another important thing to take away from this, and obviously the team will change some during the offseason, but you know, their opponent in that second game was Seattle, and Seattle has been an absolute nightmare in the second half of back-to-back games. I know this is something that Jeremy has spoken about. In seven straight second games of a back-to-back, Seattle has allowed four or more goals to their opponent. They've been shut out several times. You know, this will be the kind of pattern to kind of keep an eye on, because it's not something that probably most people pay attention to. But if that is repeatable, if we see that happen again, and I'm sure they will do everything they can to try to coach it out of them in the offseason, but if you can see a pattern like this, that might influence your decisions about, you know, what sort of backup goalies, you know, you want to stream in and that sort of thing when you're scheduling against your opponent, you know, which I think is a predominant strategy when grabbing backup goalies, unless, you know, if you have a backup goalie who's on a heater, then probably we're talking about, should they be eating up more of a share of starts, right? So oftentimes it's usually just thinking about, is this someone who matches up well against that opponent? So keep an eye out for that next season, because, I mean, it was free money starting goalies against Seattle in the second game of a back-to-back, and I wish I had taken a little bit more advantage of it. I guess we have a quick outchery and injury to talk about, and then some more significant outcheries to get to. Neil Pionk, a guy that I'm going to mention a little bit later when we get to some of our best and worst moves, is back for Winnipeg, running that second power play. So, you know, if he got dropped because it was late season and he was injured, maybe keep an eye out for that. He's been quite productive from that spot, even though Morrissey clearly has a stranglehold on power play one. We also saw a precautionary exit for Ilya Sorokin on Monday's game. You know, not for nothing, but if someone could have fallen on him last week and he had made five fewer saves, I'll only be banging this drum, you know, for the rest of my life. So, I'll try and take it easy here today, but he did have a player fall on him and did not play in the third period. Michael McCarron landed on his shoulder during the second. Marcus Hogberg finished. Just someone to kind of keep an eye on there, because if Sorokin doesn't play Thursday, we could have Hogberg getting that Thursday game, and then the Islanders have a back-to-back this weekend that you imagine if Sorokin is, you know, close to being able to play, they'll try and stick him in there. But yeah, Hogberg gets the Thursday game, and then he's going to get one of those back-to-backs over the weekend. He hasn't won a lot of games recently, but he is an above average goaltender for the season. 2.62 goals against average, 907 save percentage for the season. Not bad. And, you know, we've seen recently that, you know, they've had some offensive success. Obviously, they beat Washington on Sunday. You know, during the big Ovi game, you have to imagine that the enormous distraction that was taking place for the Caps might have had a bit of an impact there. But yeah, Marcus Hogberg, a nice possible streaming option for you Thursday and Saturday or Sunday, depending on how things shake out injury-wise.
I'm just going to say, I agree. He is an interesting pickup, because unless you're in a Cats league where you're looking for wins, he does have a pretty good goals against average and save percentage, as you said. It's just that win is going to be hard fought. He's on that cold streak. And if you need it, and you probably do if you're looking right now in your finals week, it's going to be tough to really buy into that. But I do like the opponents. I do think it's interesting, but do watch for Sorokin to return. He wasn't severely impacted where he left the ice right away. He just didn't return for the third. So could be just precautionary.
All right. I'm going to let you take the next one, because I might, I might have some kind of bottom reaction to it. So I'd like you to take the news from Minnesota, please.
Yes. Jumping over to Minnesota. We've got Joel Eriksson-Ek and Kaprizov practicing. They are practicing on their regular lines. And if you've forgotten what those are, because it's been so long, you are not the only ones. It's Foligno with Eriksson-Ek and Boldy, Kaprizov with Rossi and Zuccarello. Kaprizov has missed 28 straight games. He's missed 40 out of the past 43 games, and all because of that lower body injury that caused him to have surgery in late January, where they said, expect a minimum of 4 weeks. And it has definitely been more than 4 weeks. Then we've got Joel Eriksson-Ek. He's missed the past 21 games with a lower body injury. I personally wasn't a Kaprizov owner or a Joel Eriksson-Ek owner this year, so I have not been feeling as much pain as some Short Shift show hosts who are taking a minute to breathe. And I am curious, though, for you, Lewis, I have to bring you back in, is how do you feel about them next year, knowing that they had these long-standing injuries? Like, does that make you a little nervous, or are you going to forgive and forget over the summer?
So we're not streaming today's episode, so you can't see that I'm doing, like, the World War I 1,000-yard stare. But, yeah, this was really tough. You know, I was able to stream in Minnesota powerhouses, Johansson and Freddie Gaudreau, for their Streamagami during the final week of the playoffs in Kakupful. But, you know, I couldn't help but fantasize about what it would have been like, you know, way back in September when I was thinking about having those two in the last week of the finals. I am rethinking Kaprizov. I am enormously frustrated. He was outstanding in points per game. This is something that I'll, while I wrote some of the stuff up in the best and worst move stuff, but he was fourth overall in fantasy points per game at over 7 points in Kakupful scoring, but he was way down in 190th in overall value, obviously because he only played, 37 games, I want to say. I think that's correct, 37 games. Yikes. So, you know, that's about half of what you get out of a Kakupful season. That's not good enough, even when you are performing really well. He's shown now to be a bit of a Band-Aid boy. This has been multiple problems. And as Ryan Downey has been pointing out, we don't have a lot of faith in the medical staff of the Minnesota Wild. There was something with the Four Nations. I forget exactly how the story all unfolded, but something about the Wild's med team and had some kind of impact during Four Nations when some players were injured. The handling of the Kaprizov injuries, you know, has not been great. Obviously, the information has been not very effective either, you know, because a lot of us sat on him for several weeks trying to figure out what to do. I did ultimately trade him, thank goodness. And credit to Nazem Kadri for being as effective as he was, although he was no Kaprizov in that regard. You know, Joel Eriksson Ek, also just a guy who, you know, you're counting on to pile up counting stats, especially. Didn't shoot very well this season, and had very long stretches on multiple occasions where just putting on plenty of shots but not scoring. Pretty frustrating own, you know, and then to have them come back the week after is a bitter pill to swallow. So, you know, I will happily say that I'm over it, but I'm clearly not over it. Yeah, this is one where I'm just going to have to find a place to bury it and, you know, next year move along. But yeah, I think after a couple years as a Kaprizov owner, it's been very fun because he's a great player, obviously. But my faith in his ability to stay healthy and my faith in the Wild's medical staff is not great. So that's one that I think I will probably let fall to another player. You know, by the time we finish discussing in our allied chat, all of the people who picked seventh overall, we all kind of said we should have picked Cale Makar. Live and learn. Better luck next time. You know, again, outstanding points per game, but the number of games that you're actually adding up, that matters too. So yeah, that's one that will haunt me a little bit, but you know, like they say, you can't win your league in the early rounds, but you can sometimes lose it. And Kaprizov at one and Jeek at five definitely hurt down the stretch, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I feel for your allied chat having to go through that. Ours chat did not experience too much trouble. So I won't be able to complain and commiserate there.
Just one last kind of takeaway here is that I tried to get away from this a little bit because, you know, I have these fancy plans for what the fantasy playoffs are going to look like. But obviously, you've got to make, you know, the playoffs that truly matter. And so I obviously love the Wild's schedule in the late season, the Capitals as well. And, you know, they really performed. Like, I have been, you know, an NIT champion a few years in a row and just missed out on it this year. But you know, I want to actually be in the ones that matter too. So I think next year I'm going to really try and de-emphasize a little bit worrying about that late season stuff. Maybe when I start making some trade deadline deals, that's what I'll be thinking about more. Especially because I'll have a better sense of where I'm at in the season. But I'm going to try to kick some of those. I'm going to de-emphasize the value of those late game super schedule guys, because there's a lot between you and actually being able to play them in those rounds.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we always say you're fighting for your playoff spot first. And if you don't get there, then, I mean, it doesn't matter who's on your team at that point, right? It's a little bit tough. All right. Off of that sore subject and into another injury news, we've got Jacob Trouba out with a lower body injury. This time of year, I'm not expecting to get a lot of news on what these injuries are. So you can try looking, but I could not find too much on this. He's missed three games and counting. If we count today's contest, I should say on Wednesday. And then he did participate in a morning skate, but he's just not really ready to go. And this is another injury for a team that's already got a few injuries. We've got Gibson out still, Fabry, Johnson, and now Trouba. So they are struggling a little bit, but we know the Ducks, when you expect them to lose, that's when they win. So keep an eye out on them, but I don't have a lot of knowledge to help anybody who's trying to win with the Ducks on their team this week.
Yeah, I would say probably not a lot of great streamer options, but, you know, Zegras, Carlson, Terry, even Gauthier have been pretty decent options here. So maybe Gauthier is a guy that you might think about adding, you know, if you need some extra games late. They might find themselves in some track meets trying to keep pace with scoring if the defensive end and obviously with Gibson out and Dostal getting an awful lot of starts, maybe that becomes something that starts to wear on him. Let's see some other news. And I, you know, just sorry to circle back a little bit. Kaprizov and Joel Eriksson Ek were practicing on the power play line, and they were in. It wasn't just that speculation about them coming back. Just for clarity's sake, I don't know if we ever got around to actually saying that. I think of that because McDavid is going to take a pregame skate tonight, so we may see him take the ice. I believe you have a family member who's at the game, so we'll send some good vibes that she'll get to see McDavid out there skating. But we know Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is going to remain out. Dreisaitl will not get the opportunity to play either.
Yes, I chose to be here with Lewis instead of being at the game tonight. It absolutely has nothing to do with all the players who are out for the Oilers. I still love them. I still am going to be watching them on my TV. But yeah, we're out. Frederick, he played one game and then he's out again with his ankle. We're still missing Skinner. It's the Kane's still out. The list just keeps going on and on. It's starting to be a little bit scary as an Oilers fan. The closer we get to playoffs, not seeing these guys return for a couple of games to get the groove back is a little concerning.
There's never been a time of the season where you can feel more confident about starting a goalie against Edmonton than it has been over the last couple weeks. So at least there's been that sort of silver lining, not for the Oilers themselves, but maybe for fantasy managers. Just a couple other items. Another ouchery, another player who I could have really used last week, Barkov, who was announced very late that he was out of his game. I was on a vacation with no internet and had no way to react to it. So again, with those limited margins, would have loved to see that. But Barkov has made a return, has been somewhat effective. I think he had an assist in the last game. And then kind of the more exciting news, Gabriel Landeskog has been loaned to the Colorado Eagles for a conditioning stint. They did say it was likely that he is going to get some games, kind of getting up to speed. He, of course, has not played for quite some time. This is going to be quite the comeback if we actually do see him play in the playoffs. I'm sure everybody is hoping to see an effective Gabriel Landeskog. It could be very interesting. I imagine that next season, should he play, he would be a very risky pick. But I can see him kind of in the vein of, you know, people who grabbed. I'm trying to think of some of the kind of injured or held out players. Just one of those guys that drops a little bit because of some worries about are they going to be in, but can surprise with their effectiveness. And obviously Colorado has the depth, you know, to be quite effective up and down the lineup. So even if he's not necessarily getting prime deployment, he could be a very interesting figure over there in Colorado. Let's jump to a quick little break here. We will see you on the other side. You're listening to Short Shifts.
This NHL season has been as predictable as a puck rolling on its edge. No one knows where it's going, but that just means there's time for your favorite team to figure things out and games left for you to get in on the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. It's super easy for first-timers to get started. Try betting on something simple like picking a team to win. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, select your team, and place your first bet. And if you're new to DraftKings, listen up! New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777. Or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ice.
Welcome back to Short Shifts, everybody. It's me, Elizabeth, stealing Lewis's thunder. Of course, he's still in the room with me because I still need a parental guidance. And he is here to be in charge for real. But I'm going to pretend for the second half of this show that it is my show. And I'm going to jump in with our first topic on the back half here. We are going to talk about Sergachev because he has had 11 multi-point games this season. And we need to talk about, is this value worth it? And I was taking a peek at this. I even went through my draft to see, did I miss out? I might have. I had already taken a defenseman when he went in the sixth round of Tier 5 Middleton. I had Uyghur, so I'm not upset. But going after him was Sanderson and Matheson. They were our next couple guys off the board. So it's kind of interesting to see who he went around there. He's 26, 27-ish. So if we all agree that peak performance for a defenseman is still later on in their 20s, he's definitely expected to keep improving. And I'm curious to see where he goes next year. I do think he'll be higher. There's been a few things we've been talking about with defensemen over the last year, and that's these offensive defensemen who are a little bit more valuable to us in a points league, whereas your traditional defensemen who you need for those categories leagues are a little bit not as exciting, we'll say, as some of these guys. So I do think that we will see him go early next year, but I also envision, and this is just my speculation while I'm still running the things here for a second, is that we're going to see defensemen go early next year because we've got a couple of guys like the Makars and stuff who are getting these good points. And the value of a replacement is hard to find in those defensemen. So I do expect a couple early defenseman runs next year.
Yeah, you know, I think Sergachev did benefit from, obviously, the early Durzi injury, another one of my many defensemen who went down before even playing a game, but gave him an opportunity really to solidify himself at the top of that power play. I think he will have an easier time. I think we can be maybe even a little more confident next season because we've seen him run that power play, which has been quite effective. You're going to get a step forward, hopefully, from guys like Cooley and Gunther. And, you know, Utah is going to have a name. You know, they're going to have a cool logo on their jerseys, a cooler logo. I actually did see the Utah Hockey Club. Well, I have beef. If they go with the Mammoth, I have beef with the way they did the Mammoth having, like, hands. That creeps me out. But overall, like, if that's the mascot they pick and the logo they pick, I do kind of love it. It was my favorite option.
Look, I went to Utah this year to go see them as the Utah Hockey Club. I need them to change their name so that trip still stands and my jersey is still cool in 1 year value.
Yeah, there you go. I like that a lot. But yeah, I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of excitement about the team. I think being able to gauge what those steps forward for Cooley and Gunther might look like is going to be really important. But Keller obviously is excellent. Nick Schmaltz, I think, surprised us quite a bit by doing more shooting and scoring than he has done in the past. He did have some long stretches where he shot a lot and didn't score. But, you know, this was not a 2022 Rob Thomas season where, you know, he just was dishing, which is kind of what we have seen from him sometimes in the past. So even with the demotion that he got, being on that top power play was still really valuable for him. So, yeah, I think there are reasons to be bullish on Utah heading into next season, but we want to make sure that we're not you know, overhyping them and reaching to grab these players. We're still trying to find them. You know, I think they're going to be worth more than they were last season, but we're not going to draft them, you know, way earlier. But yeah, Sergachev could be a really good option in there. We had a little bit for your Cats Leagues people earlier on. We got another one for you here. Just this guy was really a Cats League sneaky superstar. Alex Tuch leads the NHL with 6 shorthanded goals. He has 7 straight games with a point here late in the season, even as guys like Paterka and Dahlin have been more inconsistent. Tuch has been really good for the team late in the season. He also leads the league starting from the beginning of the 2023-24 season. He leads the league in block shots and takeaways. You're going to have to be on fan tracks to get takeaways as a stat. It's one that I really love. I remember I had Marner in a season where takeaways, you had takeaways subtracted from giveaways. And that was, you know, where what your score was in that category. And I had Marner and I was just killing people with it. But just keep an eye on Tuch, even if you don't have Tuch. That was maybe a little too strong on the long U there. Anyway, you know, keep an eye on this guy, you know, producing blocks, which is great for a forward. He might actually, I think I read that he might actually set the record for the NHL this season for blocks by a forward. So you've got Sherwood obliterating the hits record. You might have Tuch breaking the block record for forwards. Just really interesting to see him there. And obviously shorthanded points are so hard to come by and he has been outstanding. You know, if you lead the league in takeaways, yeah, you're going to get good opportunities if you're playing out there shorthanded. So that is someone, you know, just one of my favorite things to do towards the end of the season, you know, once I, you know, work my way through my thought process is just making little notes for next draft about players who maybe deserve a little bit of a bump up the rankings from wherever they might be. And Tuch is one of those guys, especially again, in a Cats league, if you count anything like shorthanded points, block shots, if you're in an awesome league that counts takeaways, gosh, I wish that league still existed. What an awesome stat to follow. That's a guy you should absolutely be looking at. And obviously a lot of value in your standard leagues too, because he is producing quite a bit for you.
Yeah, I took a look in my Cats League where I did have Tuch on my team, so it was very nice to have. And I would not have guessed it, but I had to see where did he end the season rank. I know Yahoo ranking, everybody bear with me, but 14th. I was pretty impressed by that because we have what I would say is pretty competitive, pretty standard categories. Like we're talking pims and hits and blocks and shorthanded goals, all the things basically that you could want out of a Yahoo league besides those plus minuses and stuff. And I was really impressed with how high ranked he was. I would not have expected that. And it's a keep eight league. So, I mean, this definitely opened my eyes to that as I started looking at those stats as well.
Yeah. You think about, so one thing to maybe ponder with those keeper leagues is when you have a guy who maybe doesn't have a ton of name value like Tuch, a lot of times you can kind of get away with not keeping them, but then picking them in the early rounds. Just, you know, something to think about, like not a guy that typically you would think of, oh, this guy is a must have keeper. But of course, you got to think about who else is in your league. How closely are they going to be watching these things? You know, no one knows your opponents better than you do. So
if half of them are listening to this.
yeah, see, that's great because I could never get my league mates in my buddy league invested in the show. And I'm like, okay, but I'm going on there and telling you what I plan to do like yeah. 2 times a week. Like you can really benefit from this. That was in the past, obviously. That league has been defunct since I've been down to once a week, but it has been a nice transition, definitely, and great to bring in more people onto the team. Another guy that we should maybe be thinking about changing our perspective on, or actually really, I just want to ask your opinion on whether we should be changing our perspective on this person, but Jack Eichel, Band-Aid boy extraordinaire, did not miss a game all season until Tuesday. So he avoided that Band-Aid boy status this year. He was a guy who definitely was pushed down in drafts, in Kakupful and elsewhere because of his reputation as a guy who, you know, tends to spend a lot of time on the injured reserve. Is this changing your way of thinking about Eichel? Do you feel better about potentially drafting him next season?
So I have been burned by him before, and that unfortunately plays a part. Every year I try to say, I'm not going to let that get in my head, but the more fantasy hockey you play, the more attachment you have to certain players or feelings about them. And when I build my draft sheet, I'm going to try to not think about the year that he burned me and was out, and he couldn't help it. I'm sure he probably didn't do it on purpose to ruin my season, but it's hard, right? Like, you've had one season where you've played, he's played 76 games. He's got 93 points, and like, happy for him, happy for Vegas. But you are asking a lot from somebody who is prone to injury. And so I think I'd still be a little bit cautious. Now, I will knock him down a little bit on my spreadsheet for being a Band-Aid boy. But if he does come up, falls to me at that point, because at that point it'll feel like I'm getting a steal, I would probably take him, yeah. Hard to give up 93 points.
Yeah, absolutely. If he's hanging out there in late round two, round three, is that sort of where you're thinking about making that move, or even earlier in two?
Ooh, I think I'd have to go three, or yeah, you're right. I couldn't do it in the first two. Okay, there you go. Tip for anybody I'm playing against next year. It's just, I've got that attachment to knowing that I've been burned, right? And unfortunately carry this through a lot with Pavelski. He was helping me win a lot, and so I kept keeping him, and he kept getting older and not doing as good.
Sure.
So, well, you know.
It's interesting you bring that up. So that is also what I said I wanted to do at the start of this season. And I think I did it to some limited success. I, you know, grabbing Ovechkin in the fourth round when a lot of people didn't have great expectations. Like, I had suffered mightily having taken him in the second round the year previous. And that was a really hard one. But obviously, you know, he was outstanding this season when he wasn't out with a broken leg. So, you know, that really paid off. A guy that I was not able to overcome that sort of concern was John Tavares, who also had a great bounce back season. And he had just been so dreadful, especially late in the year, getting dropped down to third line. Like, it just was an ugly situation. So, yeah, I was able to get past it in one situation and benefited from it. I missed out on another good player. That I, you know, regret not grabbing when I could have had him, because Tavares bounced back really nicely. So I think that is a really good strategy. I think it is very difficult, as you say. But yeah, if you can be, you know, really methodical with it and, you know, think to yourself too, okay, other people saw how horrifying it was having these players previously. Like, they know that it's going to push them down a little bit. So there is an opportunity for value there if you are willing to reach out and touch that stove one more time. I think that's as good a transition as any into talking about some of our best and worst moves from throughout the season. Why don't you, I'll go first for worst moves, and so you can go first for best moves.
Sounds good.
And we did switch the order. Initially, when we were developing this, we had worst moves last, and we're like, well, do we really want to end this long rambling podcast with a bunch of complaining about our teams? Probably not. So bear with us for some worst moves, and then we'll have some of our best ones here towards the end for you. I've already talked about my first and second picks. Kaprizov and Dahlin were much better than their final season ranks in points per game because both of them spent significant time out. Obviously, Kaprizov much more than Dahlin. Kaprizov was fourth in fantasy points per game, and like we said, only played 37 games. Dahlin was 37th in fantasy points per game and was the fourth D, but he was not worth a second round pick. He didn't, the scoring didn't, you know, really improve as much as you would have hoped. And, you know, you're relying on him for some of those peripherals. It just, you know, wasn't enough there. Should have grabbed Kale in the first if I was really committed to an early defenseman. And I had told myself I was going to avoid the early D, and I did not. So lesson learned there. And of course, next year when I am also picking in the middle of the draft, maybe I grab Kale McCarr, you know, and don't learn my lesson at all. But we'll see how it goes. Just the top 10 in my draft overall, getting injured too much. I lost Doughty out of that group. Barkov spent time injured as well. We already talked about Joel Eriksson X. So just not great from the Band-Aid Boys collection. And then just a couple guys that I got rid of a bit too quickly when they were dropped down to line three for a game or two, who I maybe should have had a little bit more faith in. Players like Eklund, Kent Johnson, you know, who you stream in and are worth holding on to. You know that there are worse players on your roster. And so, you know, I think it just was, and I think this happens to every manager at some time during the season if you have significant moves, but just looking to get that extra game here and there, and you're like, who can I drop? Ken Johnson on the third line off the top power play. Let's get rid of that guy. But then, you know, we saw we saw Columbus go off with some just outrageous offensive performances in the last month of the season. It would have been nice to have him there on the roster. So, and then one last one, I said I was going to mention Pionk. If I had bid an extra dollar, I could have gotten him quicker earlier in the season when I was just, you know, every one of my fingers was plugging a hole in my blue line for injured players. So it would have been nice to have Pionk on that. And I wish I had bid a little more. I almost am never guilty of underbidding. I almost always am just throwing money away on players no one else bids on. But this was not one of those cases, and I should have gone a little harder. How about you, Elizabeth? What were some of your worst moves of the season?
Yes, I'm going to get my Pionk story out of the way here. I do have it in the best moves, guys, but I'm just going to say I actually drafted Pionk in the bottom three of my draft, and he ended up staying on my team the whole year, whether he was in that IR slot or actually playing. So I was quite happy with that. That was one of my fun moves. But just while we're on the topic of him,
yeah, it's not easy to get a, you know, quality figuring out who those non-power play one defensemen who are going to be able to give you quality performances throughout the year is such a difficult task, but he looks like one of those guys who could potentially be in that spot.
Absolutely. All right. My worst moves. I have to start with goalies, and I know I probably am a broken record to anybody who knows me and has listened to me talk about goalies for years, but I had to drop both my Kakuffle second goalie, which was Jari, very early in the season. He just wasn't performing. Then it happened to me in another points league. I dropped Montembeau. I know he came back, but it was hard to hold him at the beginning of the season. So I did drop him. And then to end one of my seasons, it was a non-Kakuffle league, and I streamed three goalies in the last week because I was projected to lose all week. So I'm like, goalies, all right, high risk, high reward. They all got me negative points. I still won by 1 point, but I was doing myself no favors with goalies this year. I was streaming all the wrong goalies at all the wrong times, but lesson learned, you know, if you're going to take that risk, you might not always be rewarded. The same thing can be said about the players that I dropped who went on hot streaks right after I would drop them. Petrangelo and Neighbors come to mind because I gave people permission on this show to drop them. I was like, I'm over them. I'm done. Drop them with me. Hopefully you guys didn't, because I dropped them and they went on hot streaks instantly. Got that short shifts bump. And then I just wanted to say, because we come on and we talk about a lot of players on here and we always want to add them and, you know, play with them and stuff, I felt like I played it really safe on my Kakuffle team. And I was making all kinds of exciting moves on some of my other teams because I was just trying to be so strategic with my Kakuffle team that I was afraid to take some of those risks. I had Raquel early. I had Ross Colton at the start when he was hot. I grabbed Pod Colson when he was hot on the top six there. At the end, I had Marchman and Suter, but I never had them in the Kakuffle where I needed them because I really want that championship t-shirt. And I say at this, I would give up my other win to have that Kakuffle win and be able to have that champion logo in the Discord. But I wasn't making enough of those kind of like risky plays with my team. And I think next year I'm going to do more of that because I think it paid off for me on, we'll call it my tester league, but I wasn't doing it enough.
Yeah. Someone in the Discord was asking, I think I was asked this question specifically, but I think it was a good general question too. Would you rather have your team win the Stanley Cup or would you rather win an ultimate championship? And without question, I would rather win an ultimate championship than have the Detroit Red Wings win a Stanley Cup. I'm sorry, Red Wings fans out there. I obviously can't make this happen. Otherwise, I would have sometime in my, you know, many years that I was in Tier 1 before this, you know, last few years of relegation, you know, age and kids are catching up with me. I think I've lost my fastball a little bit, but man, if I could make that deal, I would do it in a heartbeat. So sorry, if the Red Wings don't win a cup and I somehow win a championship, we'll all know what the true reason was. That monkey's paw, you know, that finger is curling down as we speak. But I you brought up a really good point, and I want to expand on it a little bit about playing it safe versus taking risks. And I think there are times for doing both. And this was another thing that I kind of latched onto this season, or feel like I learned a little bit this season, is with as many injuries as I had early in the year, I was able to take a few more risks and grab some players who I thought were good. But I also, at times felt like I was just plugging holes as opposed to improving my roster. And I do think a lot of those early season moves, you want to be thinking about the short term, but also the long term a little bit. And by the middle of the season, once your roster is kind of settled and you figured out, you know, you've cleared out some of the crap from the bottom of your roster and replaced them with some interesting players, I think there is a ton of value to being able to preserve those moves, to have a couple moves left to plan, you know, in case of emergency on a Sunday, but hopefully for moves that you can make for the week that follows. And I found myself chasing in matches where I probably should have just been giving up, but I felt, especially early in the season, like if I let this slip away from me, I'm really going to be in trouble. And what I found later in the season, like I said, I went on a 5-week winning streak and almost got that 6th week in the consolation bracket too. And a big part of that was because I was beat by enough, you know, in that 6th week back that I said, okay, I'm going to start planning for the future rather than trying to chase right now. And from that point forward, I was able to put myself in a position where I was doing more adding for the next week each week. And I think that really helped me extend that streak. You know, it let me get those Minnesota Wild players, even though they weren't the ones that I wanted to be playing for their last week's Dream Agami. You know, there is a lot of value to that approach. So I do think, you know, moving quick and taking some risks early on makes a ton of sense. But I think once your roster starts to settle down, if you can afford to, and again, like I said, plugging holes too much of the season, chasing too much of the season. But if I could go back and tell myself, look, you're just going to lose this week, start focusing on next week and start to try to recover and see if you can't put yourself in a position where instead of using your 4th move by Thursday, you're using your 3rd and 4th moves on Sunday. I would definitely have, you know, hindsight obviously being 20/20, but I think you can give up one of those weeks and set yourself up for more success down the road. And it is more comfortable. And, you know, it makes you feel like a bit more of a shark. You know, you can wait on, you know, being able to grab that extra player that, you know, is out there who is suddenly in a great position. But if you're out of your moves by Thursday, you're just not doing that kind of thing. So just some timing strategy to think about when to make those moves, when to be aggressive and when to be a little more cautious is, you know, obviously different for every league, but I think early season, take those risks, mid and late season, if you can start to push those moves to later in the week, you're really going to benefit.
Absolutely. And it's hard to do nothing on those weeks where you're like, I should just throw in the towel and start planning for the next week, especially early in the season. There's such a small sample size. You're like, oh, one more win will just push me up a little bit further in the listing, right? Like it's hard. I get it. But, I wish I had taken a couple more. I think next year I'm going to have to play a little bit more risky so I can top tier 4.
Yeah, I love the idea.
Yeah, jumping into some of my best moves, I had to bring up this first one because no one is going to be surprised about my love for him this year. But Dylan Holloway, I absolutely think this helped me through so much. And I was so focused on how awesome he was doing that I was able to like just move other players around that I probably wouldn't have normally moved out of my roster because I picked him up and he was doing so well. So that is one of my favorite ones. I'm happy to cheer from him from afar. But, you know, that had to be mentioned. I can't get out of a show without talking to him about a former Oiler. The other one I mentioned already with Pionk there, getting some of my bottom draft picks and having them be surprisingly good for my team for long stretches or even the full season wasn't what I had gone in planning to do. I had planned, like so many people, to try to get some players for those early European games. It just didn't work out. But I still had both Pionk and Granlund on my team at the end of the year, and I had drafted them within those bottom 3 rounds. So I was pretty impressed with that. And being able to use my ads those weeks for other people was really nice when there were injuries and things, rather than always having to be streaming those bottom few spots. Yeah. My last piece was my regular streamer guys. Every year, I feel like I have a few of these guys who I just like rotate in and out all year. And for me this year, it was Fogle and Coronado starting in early November. Actually, I was kind of surprised when I looked back at when I first started bringing them in. And then, like I already complained about, I played a lot of goalie roulette this year. And as much as I'm going to complain about the times it didn't work out for me, there were definitely games and weeks that I won because of a good goalie stream. So I have to give them a little bit of credit. But with those regular streamer guys, I love watching them as the years progress. Like Henrique was one of my favorite streamers for a couple of years. There's been a couple others that I've really enjoyed. Hyman was one until he came to the Oilers. He was always a good stream because he was always getting the opportunity there. And now you basically have to draft him or you're not getting him. But I like watching those guys and seeing where they go in the next few years. And Coronado is one that I think excites me.
Yeah, he really put on a show at times this season and has been a bright spot for, you know, what was otherwise a fairly tough year, I think, in Calgary in general. You know, as someone living in the midst of the Battle of Alberta, you know this better than I do. But, you know, I think that is definitely an interesting spot there. All right. Some of my best moves. I think my number one was a trade that I made relatively early in the season. Both me and this other person were looking to dump someone off our roster who is underperforming. So I traded Jonathan Marchessault for Tom Wilson and Kiefer Sherwood. It helped that Sherwood went on a nice little run from there. But even just the main players in here did make a pretty significant difference. Wilson ended up averaging 5.36 points per game on the season, or at least on the season thus far, which is a full point ahead of where Marchessault ended up. So that did work out pretty nicely for me. You know, Marchessault certainly regressed to the mean following that trade, and actually the first week or so was outperforming Wilson. But one of the big things that I liked about Wilson was he was on that top power play for Washington. And after the first month of the season, Travis Yost had that expected goals and actual goals rankings of different teams on the power play and at even strength. And Washington was close to the bottom of the league in the delta between what they were actually producing versus what was expected of them. So they thought that power play was going to pick things up, and by goodness, it did. Even with Ovechkin out, Wilson kind of helped me get through that. So that was a nice deal. Again, we had that Sherwood run. You know, would have loved to have him for the end of the season too, but it wasn't in the cards. But that was a really nice little streak. I was able to pick up Darcy Kemper from waivers. I think when I do my season postmortem and kind of look at some of the good and bad there, I'll figure out exactly what it was that put him on waivers in the first place, but I was able to get him with a $0 bid and just, you know, obviously was really outstanding, especially in the late part of the season. And then a couple of my picks, getting Ovechkin in the fourth and Vasilevsky in the sixth. My division was very out on goalies. Hellebuyck got picked up in the second and, you know, played out of his mind all season long, and Winnipeg has been outstanding, so I can't fault them there. But I couldn't let Vasilevsky fall when I could see him. He was in there in the six. He's a guy who plays a lot, and yeah, he had some rough patches in there, but he ended up being the 40th overall ranked player, even though he obviously didn't start every game. You know, had some nice shutouts there late in the season. Just played really, really well. So that ended up being a nice pick for me. I do not have a great track record of getting goalies, but that seemed like a slam dunk, and it turned out pretty well. And yeah, so, you know, some hits and misses in that draft. You know, like I said, the injuries were really tough, but definitely some valuable lessons learned here about when to make some of these choices and strategizing about playoffs and thinking about when to use your moves. Like, all of this is sort of where my headspace is here in the late season. And, you know, not for nothing. I know I've complained about it a lot, but sometimes, you know, a loss that gets stuck in your craw a little bit, that's going to help you, you know, maybe be more focused in. I think my prep for next season, I think, is going to be strong as I look to elevate myself to a higher tier here.
Yeah, I think every season teaches us something and gives us something to watch for as we play more. I've only been playing for 7 years. I guess that's a long time after all. But I was looking back at mine as well, and I was just kind of like, oh, like I used to do this and now I do this. And it's really interesting to see what you learn as you come up against these things. Like, now we're talking about like which Band-Aid boys I am probably avoiding and who you're avoiding, players who have really like made your team. I was talking to one of the patrons the other day about Binnington. I have a soft spot for him because he won for me 1 year in like a crazy shutout. It's just little things that you start to like grow your game on and start to watch for a little bit more. And I love it.
Yeah, one of the most fascinating things for me at the start of each season is discovering like what new teams I'm a big fan of. Like last year, I loved Nashville because I had Saros and I had Yossi. You know, it just every I was looking forward to every Nashville game, right? And I didn't have any Nashville players this year, and mostly I was cheering against them. And it's just interesting how your loyalties shift as things change up. So, yeah, I mean, that's what's always fun about the new season. You know, when I start to think about verses for the night before hockey, you know, that might be the next time some of you hear from me, you know, next time I'm live on there. But I think I'm sure we'll do something this summer. We've been thinking about doing a short shifts round table with all five of us. Maybe taking, you know, four or five questions and sort of discussing them. I think that could be really fun. Definitely, you know, continuing on these lessons learned from the season, I think is one of the most valuable things in the off season to help you get yourself in the right headspace. Because, you know, especially, you know, you've been doing this for 7 years, you know, I've got a decade plus that I've been playing the game, and you get yourself into these sort of mindsets at the start of the season. When you're preparing for your draft and you're getting ready to get underway. And, you know, it's very, it can be hard sometimes to pull over those lessons you're thinking about in April and apply them in September. So being able to carry over through that break is really important. It's a good reason why you might want to become a Keeping Carlson patron if you are not yet. Of course, the off-season discount is going into effect shortly, just $1 a month. And gives you the opportunity to play in, hands down, the best playoff pool I've ever played in, with redrafts and eliminations, and it's really, really fun. I know we'll be, you know, once it gets to playoff time, we'll be doing our not-so-slow drafts to have everybody get their teams together. Just the discussion is always outstanding. There's a bunch of Short Shifts hosts who I just saw in the top 10 most posted messages all time on Discord, which was an interesting discussion we were having about, you know, who is contributing. There was a first year player in that top 10 who just has been burning up the Discord all season long. We were looking at the different, you know, allied chats, which are such a great resource to have a group of people you can ask for advice without revealing your hand to anyone else in your league. Just a great space, really positive, lots of happy celebrations, obviously, as we've crowned our various champions. Just has been an awful lot of fun. And it's been so fun having you and Ryan along. Of course, Shams and Jeremy, who joined us last year. Love where Short Shifts is headed. It's been a blast. This has been anything but a short shift. So I'll let you have the last word here, Elizabeth, before we close things out.
Absolutely. I do want to say we don't call everybody out on the Discord for how much they talk, just the top few. And I did feel a little bit called out. So next year, my ally chat needs to be prepared that I'm going to talk way more so that I'm not the lowest Short Shifts allied chat talker, just so we're clear.
Interesting.
Yeah, everything in life's a competition, Lewis. And I'm going to make sure that next year, my ally chat knows, like, I'm there. Hey, let's chat more. But yes, I have had an absolute blast. It has been so much fun getting to know you and Ryan and Shams and Jeremy and Elon and Brian so much better through our chats and figuring out what's going on. And I absolutely loved and enjoyed every minute of this. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, I hope that we don't end up with Derek and Shams and Brian all in the same is it Shams? Anyway, we have three of the hosts are all together in the same division. And I think that really killed some of the interesting discussions we could have had throughout the season in the Short Shifts secret chat. So maybe that did lead me to rely a little bit more on my allied chat. But yeah, just an absolute blast. Always a great season. Always sad to look out into the desert of summer baseball, but there will be lots to do. I'm sure we'll have, you know, mock draft after mock draft, always really fun. We collect a ton of data and publish it over the summer. So I think that'll be one of the most 100. Fun things to get into. Yeah, top 100, you know, one day at a time. We got lots of stuff to keep you occupied through the long, dark summer months. Dark, obviously, in terms of missing out on hockey, not necessarily in terms of day length, although we do have Southern Hemisphere players in the cupful, we have players all around the world. So I don't want to leave those folks out. It will be a little bit darker for you not just metaphorically. Thanks everybody for joining us. If you have made it all the way to the end of this long rambling podcast, we said when we sat down that this was going to be zero discipline. Elon said talk however long you want. And by God, we did. So thanks for sticking with us through what has been anything but a long shift. I won't repeat the call to join the Patreon group. I've made my pitch, just letting you know, keepingcarlson.com/patron. Get in for a buck. Get in for the playoff slow draft competition, which is awesome and super fun. Elon usually like gives you some weird thing that he grabs out of his room if you win. but I know they send like stickers and other stuff. We have like, you know, they have good merch now. So maybe you'll get some t-shirts. You can't see on the stream, but Elizabeth has her Keeping Carlson sweatshirt on. I've got a couple shirts as well. Always fun to have, you know, rep it out there. One day someone is going to be like, oh, I actually listened to that show. And I'll be like, wow, that's
my goal
to me. But you know, there are
if someone sees me in the wild wearing it,
yeah, please like wave me down. I would love to be, you know, recognized as a, you know, podcast host one day in my life. It doesn't have to be constantly every time I'm outside, but like just one time I would love to have that experience. Check out Game Day Tweets for this last week if you're still fighting in here, and obviously all over the summer, trade deadline, new contracts. Maybe we'll see some more offer sheets, you know, after Holloway's great success you were talking about, right? So there'll be interesting things going over the summer. You know, maybe we'll get another, the trade is one for one kind of experiences, right? So there's always lots to talk about. But yeah, Game Day Tweets, best place to get information from Twitter. Just outstanding work by Shams and Elon. Please visit that site and the other great sites we use to research our episode. I use research with scare quotes here today because we're mostly off the cuff here. But Yahoo, Frozen Tools, Natural Stat Trick, always a great place to go. Our intro and outro music was created by Pat Roach. And until we see you next time, play smart, folks, and keep your shifts short.